The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes, Horse David Hayes. I think that problem is that I get myself physically exhausted. And when it happens, occasionally the lack of sleep, the running around the country, it gets me down. But I actually feel pretty good. And thankfully, we'll have Rod on and we'll have Josh Norris on in a few minutes to kind of take the load off of me. We had originally had the guys from the office teed up to the show this week, but because of some travel schedules, they were not able to do that. So we're actually in the studio on Tuesday recording, and I am a little bit anxious about that because, of course, Wednesday is a huge day, and that's the day the Fed meets and comes out and speaks. So a lot to talk about today, a lot to talk about always, right? And I'm sure if you listen to Glass in the afternoon, you'll get a chance to hear what Hot Rod has to say on the show on Friday afternoon. So looking forward to that. So yeah, we're going to talk with Josh Norris. He's our Medicare guru. It is open enrollment period. It is upon us. What does it mean? What does Medicare do? What does it pay for? Is it free? No, all that's no and yes. So we'll get with that in a few minutes. And then later on, Powell, Chairman Powell, the Fed chairman, he does draw from Volcker's playbook, which is keeping at it. So we'll talk about that as well. Get on to the U.S. government debt revealed, the usdebtclock.org. Pretty interesting stop if you're bored to watch the thing run like a $5 gallon gas pump. It's just out of control. And what does that mean for you? And then later on, why gold prices surprisingly are down despite this metal stature as a haven, especially during sticky inflation times. So a ton to talk about today. And little time to do it. So because my voice is on the brink of disaster, and I'm heading to Florida tomorrow morning for total fun, Disney World, for about 3 days with some friends off of a Dallas trip that I left last Wednesday. Thursday, Friday, flew into Dale Hollow, did some boating on Friday night, did duck hunting, believe it or not, on Saturday morning, and then back to Bloomington to then quickly change and get cleaned up and headed to Indianapolis for the Miracle Maker event for the Children's Organ Transplant Association. Sunday morning, completely wiped out. No church service in my future that morning. On to two going away parties, one for a nephew that's headed to the Marines, another one that's a nurse that's moving to California, and on top of that, a youth football game overtime win at Edgewood. So no wonder with that kind of a schedule that I would be sitting here with a voice that's on the brink of disaster, and the show must go on. We'll be right back with Josh Norris, our Medicare guru. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Josh Norris now joins me on the phone. Of course, the Medicare guru down at Comprehensive Financial. And Josh, I'm sitting here with a very rough, rough voice, sounding like a, an old WWE wrestler or something like that. So you're going to have to carry the weight for me today. But here we are again, dude. I mean, Medicare, obviously, with over 10,000 people a day turning 65 in America, it's no different here locally that people are confused, concerned, unsure what they need to do when it comes to Medicare. So I thought I might have you just give a Medicare 101 talk first before we get into what is upon us, which is the open enrollment season.
Sure, yeah. Thanks for having me, Dave. It's the open enrollment season. Well, technically the annual enrollment period is about to happen, but you know, just for a general overview with for Medicare, it's people who are 65 and older or who are on disability. So, you know, if you're about to turn that age soon, your enrollment is coming up. You don't need to count. A common misconception out there is that you have to enroll no matter what, but that's actually not true. If you're still working and have coverage through your employer, or your spouse is still working and has coverage through the employer, then technically you don't have to enroll in the Medicare. You can stay on the employer plan, and you don't have to enroll into Medicare until you retire or you lose coverage through your spouse's retirement. But of course, if you don't have coverage, if you're not covered through an employer or your spouse's, then you definitely want to get enrolled in Medicare. You can do that automatically by just taking your Social Security benefit. If you're taking your Social Security benefit, you're going to be enrolled automatically. If not, if you're holding off on that Social Security benefit, then you need to go. You can enroll online at SSA.gov or just contact your local Social Security office, and they can get you enrolled that way as well. So that's kind of a general overview of Medicare there, about when to enroll. And then, of course, you know, you have your A and B. That's hospital medical. You can get a supplement, or you can go with an advantage plan. That's a very basic general overview right there. So
right now, I think the main focus would be, yeah, part A is your hospitalization. Part B is your kind of your outpatient doctor visits. But there are other costs involved, and that's where you can pick it up from there. So there is a cost to Part B. And it's going up because inflation's been going up. So folks that used to be paying, you know, $130 a month for Medicare Part B, Josh, is now over $170 a month. And in fact, with the new inflation numbers we're expecting to see, could be much higher than that going forward. And that's for two people if you're married, that you double that up. And it could be even more if you have higher incomes, where you could pay, you know, substantially more, you know, like four or five times more if you are in these higher income brackets.
Yeah, that's correct. Yep. So, yeah, Medicare right now costs $170. It saw its biggest jump last year from $148 to $170. But yeah, it's. I think it's going to increase again. Not sure how much, but I would assume it's going to increase again. So, yeah, $170 a month, and then from there you have your option of picking up a supplement and a drug plan. You know, that route, that's going to cost you an extra $150 a month, roughly, or the Advantage plan route. All you do is pay the Medicare premium, and you got all your benefits inside the Advantage plan.
So Josh, it used to be that we would suggest, and did on the show for years, that if you were someone who wasn't planning to travel a lot, going to kind of stay in the area, you would go with an Advantage plan because it was more traditional insurance, like you had to stay in a network. If you were going to Florida, down to Myrtle Beach or down to, you know, whatever during the wintertime, you might want to supplement because it's more of a federal thing. But you were telling me that over the last couple of years, a lot of that's changed, and people need to understand the differences between a traditional supplement and an Advantage plan. So take some time and talk about the differences between the two, what the compare and contrast.
Yeah, so, you know, the traditional way is, you know, where Medicare is your primary, A and B, that's your primary, and then a supplement is provided by a private insurance company, and a supplement basically picks up the out-of-pocket expense that Medicare has, A and B. With that route, you can go to any doctor you want to see in the country as long as they accept Medicare. So really no networks, just got to make sure the doctor and facility you're going to accepts Medicare. Advantage plans is essentially is an alternative to original Medicare. So if you decide to go with an Advantage plan, you're actually leaving original Medicare, and now you're getting your benefits through a private health insurance company that's been commissioned, empowered by the government, Medicare, to provide those benefits. So when you choose an Advantage plan, you're leaving original Medicare, and now you're on the, now the insurer becomes the company that you chose. And typically in those plans, they're kind of like how regular health insurance works. It consists of a network, so you got to see the doctors that accept those plans. Now, in the beginning years, when Advantage plans first came out, there were some serious issues with that. Their networks, lack of a better word, stunk, and the plans weren't that great. Fast forward to today, the plans really have improved a lot, and as far as networks are concerned, they've solved, for the most part, a lot. You know, if you're going to be a snowbird going down to Florida, it's really not a problem anymore. Honestly, if you have an Advantage plan, you can find it'll reciprocate. You can find doctors that'll accept it down there, you know, or Arizona, you know, places like that where people typically snowbird. So advantage plans, yes, you have to operate within the network, but these networks have gotten pretty robust now.
So the cost benefits, so versus a supplement versus an advantage plan, obviously supplements you're going to pay monthly, but many advantage plans can be, you know, even zero cost in some cases.
Correct. Yeah. So with the traditional way, you know, a supplement's going to cost you, a 65-year-old, about $100 a month. And then you got to get a drug plan, which is going to be an additional, you know, $15 to $25 a month. So, you know, if you go the supplement, the traditional path with a supplement, you're going to be spending, you know, $125, $150 more dollars a month in premium than you would with an advantage plan. The benefit you get with that, though, is that if something comes up, you know, if you're hospitalized, surgery, you know, what have you, you essentially eliminate, you know, most of your out-of-pocket expense. So the idea with the traditional path is you're going to pay more in premium on a monthly basis, regardless of whether you use it or not. But if something comes up, you essentially mitigate your out-of-pocket. With the advantage plan, you're going to save that money in premium. All you're going to do is pay the Medicare premium. So it's going to be cheaper in premium, but you're going to pay as you go, as things come up. If you need to see a specialist, if you are hospitalized, an ER visit, in hospitalization, that's, you're going to pay a portion of the bill. So I always tell people, honestly, one of the best ways to think of an advantage plan is really what people have been used to all their working life. You know, all your working life, the plan you had through your employer, it consisted of some type of network. It had a cap. It had a max out-of-pocket cap. You know, worse, you know, you want to spend more than this much money out-of-pocket. And then when stuff came up, you paid, you know, if you had to see a doctor, have a test done, you paid a portion of the bill. So really, that's how an advantage plan works.
So let's say that I'm newly retired. I'm healthy. I feel comfortable taking on an advantage plan. And now I'm 70, 75 years old, and I say, you know what, I might have more of these issues that I have out of pocket. I think I'm going to flip over to a traditional supplement. Talk about how you go back and forth, if you can, if you can't, what's the process of doing that?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, you know, somebody can definitely do that. You know, if somebody decides to start with an advantage plan, and then, you know, then years down the road, like you just, the example you gave, they want to go back to original Medicare and get a supplement, they can do that, but they're going to have to answer medical questions. Supplements make you answer medical questions, and they can decline you based on your health status. So to answer that question, yes, you can go from the Advantage plan to back to original Medicare and get a supplement, but there could be issues with getting a supplement if your health is in a bad place. If you start with Medicare and a supplement, and you want to go to it, and then it's vice versa. Say you start with Medicare and a supplement, and then a couple of years goes by, and you're like, hey, you know what, Josh, these plans look pretty cool, a lot of neat benefits. I want to go to that. That's easy. You can go to an advanced plan during the annual enrollment period. No questions asked. They got to take you. They got to accept you. So that's how that works. Now, when you first, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, when you were getting ready to head down that road, but let's say I'm getting ready to enroll in Medicare and I have health problems, it doesn't matter. You can automatically get a supplement.
Correct, yeah. I was just getting ready to say that, yeah. So, but when you first enter Medicare, you'll get a supplement, no questions asked. If you want to, you could be in the worst health possible. It doesn't matter. They can't ask you a health question. If you want a supplement, you just enroll and you got it. So, but after you're outside, once you're outside of that initial enrollment period for a supplement, you'll have to answer medical questions if you want one.
So, Josh, this is obviously something people navigate usually one time in their lives. You do it every day. So as a trusted advisor at Comprehensive Financial, if someone, even if they're not a client of ours and they want help enrolling in Medicare, they want help deciding what supplement or advantage plan to pick from, you're the guy. You're available. So how do they get a hold of you? What's the easiest way?
You can just call the office, 812-334-3190. Or you can just email me. My name, Josh Norris, like Chuck Norris, at cfci.us.
The martial arts champion of Medicare. We'll call on you that. Yeah, if you go to our website, cfci.us, go to our team, you'll see Josh's beautiful mug there. You can click that, email him directly, and he'll take good care of you. So, Josh, as always, I appreciate you. We'll have you on more during this open enrollment period to make sure people understand what they need to do, when they need to do it, and why it's so important. So, hey, if you don't mind, go tap Hot Rod on the shoulder and tell him he's up next.
I will.
All right, man. We'll have a good one. Right. We'll be back. Hey, this is Tom Allen running the show of Your Money with David Hayes today. That's what I feel like. I have not been screaming. I've not been yelling at my offensive line or my defensive line or my third and fourth grade football team. It's just one of these things that happen to me every once in a while. Normally, it's in the wintertime, but this time it happens to be in the fall. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break, come back. Pal draws from Volker's playbook. Keeping at it is the theme, keeping at it. And we're going to be recording this one day ahead of the Wednesday meeting that the Fed will have and the announcements they'll have after that. So you'll have to hear the recap of that on Glass in the Afternoon on Friday show with Hot Rod doing a big show Friday and leading into what they call happy hour. So we'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Tom Allen sitting in for David Hayes today. That's at least what I sound like. I appreciate people putting up with me. Right, only football fans would understand what I'm talking about, but Coach Allen's voice sounds like this all the time, whether you see him in March or you see him in the middle of football season. So for me, it's just a one week in a year kind of a thing. So we'll deal with it. But Rod, I was looking at the Wall Street Journal today. Now we're talking on Tuesday. We're recording early. Of course, the big meeting is Wednesday. But bond yields are trading at their highest level in more than a decade. That's posing an additional threat to stock market returns that have obviously struggled all the year to find any footing. When interest rates were rock bottom, as they were after the 2008 financial crisis, and then again after the 2020 shutdowns, it was easy, very easy, for us to justify putting money into relatively risky stocks because that's the only place you can get a return. But eventually there's an investor decision line which says, okay, I can make this over there and not take so much risk. All right, heck with that. I'm going to leave that area, which is the risk-on market. And that's the way it's always been. But we just haven't experienced this in about 20 years because the bond market's been producing such dismal returns that it's gave us the permission to pay up for stocks. And that's what we talked about for the last many, many years. And now we're to a point where we're looking at this situation and saying, okay, when is this going to end? Okay, whether or not the markets get any reprieve depends in part on what happens at the end of the Fed meeting on Wednesday. Now, you'll have the opportunity to talk to Glass in the Afternoon on Friday, but what Fed Chairman Powell says at the post-meeting news conference means everything. I mean, think about this. The markets tanked last month when he came out and said, hey, we're going to keep interest rates, keep raising them until we're confident we've reined this inflation in, even if it hurts the economy severely. And then, obviously, everyone's anxious for clarity on two things, how high interest rates will go by the end of this rate increase campaign, and how long they will stay there. So the Fed statement will mean everything on Wednesday, and I'm anxious to hear what they have to say, Rod.
Yeah, most certainly, because I think what the market has already expected is a 75 basis point increase. Now, we did talk about this a little bit on Glass's show on Monday, that there has been some whispering of maybe a full 100 basis points or 1% move. I think that would rattle the market a little bit just because 75 is a pretty big move and they've consistently done these 75s. So I think that would probably throw the market off a tad. But I think if it comes in at 75, then you're exactly right. Then we begin to listen to the language of the Fed. Do they continue to talk tough? Or do they begin to soften? My guess would be that they continue to talk tough. You still haven't had any meaningful progress. And even with the newer data that has come out since the last time the Fed spoke, we haven't received any data that tells us that inflation is tanking. Has it gone down? It most certainly has. But as we have discussed in the past, 9.1 to 8.5 to 8.3 does not mean we now have low inflation. So we have a long ways to go. In this regard, and to the point you were making earlier in that trade-off between the risk-free yield of owning government treasuries versus collecting a dividend within blue-chip, large-cap-type stocks, Well, the S&P 500 yield right now is sitting at about 1.73%. So you are easily collecting more from your treasury as your two-year begins to approach almost 4% at a little bit over 2.9. Your 10-year setting that right around that 3.5 number. Now, I think the early transition will be the people who went into equities reluctantly because they had to have the income, but they really were not embracing the risk that came with it. So I think you'll have a slight defection that probably has already begun now. The yield to get hot would have to probably exceed 4, maybe approach 4.5, before you would really begin to have people that are comfortable with equity risk that eventually say, hey, I'm comfortable with equity risk, but golly, if I can get 4.5 risk-free on the short term, I'm probably going to start diverting some of my dollars over there, which is just going to add a little extra selling pressure to what we already have, in which we know, especially on the growth side of things, you're not going to pay as high of an earnings multiple in a rising interest rate, high inflation environment as what we have been willing to pay over the last 5, 10, 15 years.
Yeah, now fewer than 16% of the S&P 500 stocks have dividend yields greater than the yield of the 2-year Treasury note. Fewer than 20% have a dividend yield greater than the 10-year note, which this past Monday reached almost 3.5%, its highest level since 2011. And those numbers mark the lowest share since 2006. So, yeah, there has to be a decision at some point people make. The other thing I was going to mention briefly is that when you mentioned, inflation not really being that low, you said this month ago that, hey, there really isn't any reason for this little rally in the stock market. I think we'll go back and retest. And the data is, there, because the most recent reports failed to show that trend continuing with the inflation dropping. Core CPI was up 0.6% in August, double July's pace. Fed interest rate increases have slowed everything. Last week, mortgage rates jumped over 6% for the first time since 2008. So those rising borrowing costs have led to declining sales in existing homes. But here's the flip side, and this is where it gets kind of wonky. Spending on other areas like clothes, food, big ticket items like cars, that's remained strong. And corporate earnings have also proved to be better than feared. So even with companies being hit by higher costs from everything from freight to raw materials to wages, the labor market has continued to be strong. So I can't help but wonder how long those trends will last, especially because the Fed doesn't look anywhere close to being done, as Rod just pointed out, with these rate increases. And I just think that he's taking a chapter right out of Volcker's playbook. Mr. Powell cited example of former Chairman Paul Volcker, who drove the economy into a deep hole, deep, deep, deep hole. In fact, probably is the reason Ronald Reagan got elected in the early 80s, with punishing rate increases to break double-digit inflation. So he said, this is Powell speaking, we must keep at it until the job is done, Mr. Powell said, invoking the new title that he's taken on, which is Keeping at It. So it pretty much underscores his opinion of where we are, and we haven't seen anything like this since the 1970s, Rod. So you've been spot on since the very beginning, and I think the question is, we'll see, right? But we'll see. After Wednesday, that'll be important, because we've said 90% of what the Fed does is in their words. So I don't know. We'll see. My guess is you're probably right. They're probably going to still keep the hammer down, because there's at this point no reason, if you go back and look at Volcker's playbook, and that's what he seems to be following, to let up anytime soon. But that doesn't mean, folks, that you should be bailing out on your strategies, because even though we talked about higher interest rates this year, we knew it was coming. We knew the unwinding of the balance sheet was coming. We knew rate hikes were coming. Did we decide early in the year to not go in on bonds? Absolutely. We started doing other things to prepare ourselves for what could happen. Did we think the stocks would go down? Sure. We thought that the permission to pay up for things would go away. But does that mean you bail out of stocks? No, because you never know what the sentiment's going to be. You never know how forward-looking the market's going to be. So once again, Rod, we've got to hammer home what you hammered home last week and the week before. Understand the purpose of your money. Understand when you're going to need it, and invest accordingly.
Yeah, most certainly. And the easy part typically is determining that there is going to be some weakness ahead of us within the stock market. So predicting that we were going to have selling pressure right now and after that rally we saw in July and through most of August, that really wasn't that difficult. The difficult part is if you sell based on knowing that over the next few months there's some potential added selling pressure, it's getting back in, because the market is going to begin its rally before the Fed is probably done increasing interest rates. The market is going to begin to sniff out that, okay, things are starting to look a little bit better even before the national economic monthly data that the Fed is predominantly looking at to guide their decisions starts to show that improvement. That's where the difficulty of potentially jumping out because you see a short-term sell-off. It's the when do I get back in, because probably when you should get back in is when you would feel the worst in the gut about actually going in and buying the market, because it's beginning to look really ugly. And that's when you start telling yourself, see, I knew I needed to sell and get out of this thing. This thing was going down, and that's probably when you needed to reenter, which is why we preach, hey, we're not going to become market timers. We will make some tactical adjustments. We may build a little bit of cash to take advantage of a potential sell-off, but we try and avoid putting ourselves in a position that the bulk of our long-term dollars, which are exposed to equities, are sitting in the sidelines earning next to nothing in cash, and then we've got to figure out when's the appropriate time to jump back in.
Yeah, the Fed has two mandates. It was funny because I don't remember which administration started giving the Fed mandates. I think it maybe was the Obama administration, I think, but maybe not. Maybe it was even Clinton. Or Bush, I don't have any idea, but they basically said, hey, you take on this responsibility, full employment and stable prices. That's their main two mandates. And the official the official definition of stable prices, they're trying to get to a formal 2% inflation target. Got a long way to go until we get that there. We're at 8.3 today. That's a long way to go. And is it a short time to get there, as they said in Smoking the Bandit, or is it a long time to get there? And that's the question at hand. Rod, I'm going to try to get through the rest of the show as my Tom Allen impersonation steps in. Any last words of wisdom before we let you go?
No, I think the biggest thing is kind of like you say, you just really have to analyze where your dollars are put and the exposure based on when you need those dollars. Get them appropriately allocated in the most conservative investments for the dollars you need the soonest, a little bit more risk for that intermediate, and then you can feel free to take on some greater equity-like risk in that long-term bucket, and then kind of don't set it and forget it, but set it and just review it from time to time, because your risk tolerance may change, your objectives may change. But I think that's the most important thing, is getting those buckets of risk lined up with the time horizon of when those dollars will be needed.
Rod Holloway, he's the Chief Investment Officer down at Comprehensive Financial, CFCI and SEC Registered Investment Advisor. Branch manager, wear all kinds of hats down there, Rod, and I know you have a big following here on the radio. So thanks again for taking time out of the middle of the day as we record pre the Fed meeting on Wednesday. So you definitely want to tune in on Friday to hear Rod on Glass in the Afternoon right around 4:30 on Big Show Friday. So, Rod, thanks as always, and I'll see you back at the shop.
You bet. Good luck, Dave, and have a good show.
I need it, Rod. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. I'm taking this week off for my podcast for obvious reasons. One, I can't hardly speak. Two, I have a choice because it's not like the radio where this slot is the slot, dude. I've got to be here. I've got to get it done. I've been doing it for almost 20 years. I can pass on the podcast for 1 week. But what I was going to talk about on the podcast this week, which of course is 2025, the final drive, what you need to know to win, which is the metaphor, of course, on my football coaching and playing days where it's the fourth quarter, right? You're down to the end of the game, and you have to make it happen. Otherwise, you're going to lose. And that's the metaphor around the book. So 2025, of course, is the expiration of the current tax code that we live under. Now, will a few things possibly change between now and the end of 2025? Sure. Is it possible some things could get extended past 2025? Absolutely. But I only know the playbook we have in front of us. I know the plays that we have to call. And the thing that I am so fascinated about, and I was going to talk about on the podcast this week, but I'll wait till next week, is the U.S. government debt revealed. You know, just let people understand what this really is. If we're $31 trillion in the hole, that's in the hole. That's how much we owe for our previous sins. And we're running trillion-dollar deficits. That's our future sins. The U.S. government debt continues its uphill climb and will soon reach, you know, $60 trillion. When I say soon, the Congressional Budget Office came out and said they think in the year 2050 or 2051, that's 28 years from now. I started doing some of my own math, thinking, okay, and but by the way, most calculators cannot do this. There's not enough zeros in these in the calculators to even get there. In fact, you have to write it down by on paper how many zeros it really is and then make sure you're getting them all in, because at first I stopped at, you know, like 30 billion. And then I'm like, oh, no. I need three more zeros to get to 30 trillion. And then I just basically ran a future value on that, you know, because we're not paying anything off. We're just getting more debt to pay the interest on our debt, plus getting more debt to pay the deficit of our budget. A deficit is where you take in money, but you spend more. And that's the way we've been operating since the early 90s. And in our past history, you would only do that when things were really bad. Like when things got bad, you'd spend more money. Government would spend more money than they brought in to help stimulate things. Or maybe you were in war. But then when you had prosperity and you had tons of revenue coming in through taxes, then you would have a surplus. And that's the way this thing worked. Well, guess what? We're bringing in more money now in revenue than we've ever done in our entire history of the country. But yet we continue to spend more. Now, a lot of countries worldwide accelerated their spending during their response to COVID-19. Spending by Congress was already out of control, increasing at a speedy clip well before the shutdowns and COVID hit. And that sparked a borrowing surge at a crazy rate, because we used to borrow in billions. And that was the first time billions came up, like 100 billion. People were like, oh my gosh, 100 billion? Are you kidding me? Well, Rod said it. I said it. When the first time in 2020 when we heard the word trillion and 3 trillion, the people choked and gagged. But then after that, it's like, all right, I mean, who cares? Another trillion, right? Well, America has the largest national debt in the world. Now, granted, we have the largest economy in the world, too, at $31 trillion. That's our national debt. With a population of around 333 million, that means a burden, a tax debt that you owe. Every citizen owes $92,800. That's per citizen. But not everybody pays taxes. You know, that includes people that are like 10. Or people that, that aren't even on the roll yet. But for everyone that files a tax return, that's almost $250,000 for each taxpayer that files. Now, if you're married, that means it's about $500,000. All right, it's crazy. If you go to usdebtclock.org, it will freak you out. Like I said, it's like watching, I said earlier, $5 gas being pumped into your tank and watching it speed by the dollars. It's more like $10 a gallon gas. Try it. I mean, look at it. It's just, is there anything you can do about it? No, you can't do anything about that. This equals 97.53% of our GDP. It's crazy. Japan, because this site also tracks other nations as well. It's pretty interesting if you go look at it. Japan has the highest public debt to GDP. The ratio is 288%. That's crazy. And it's also second in line in the U.S. with borrowing with a total national debt of $15.2 trillion. So at least we can look at Japan and say, how long can this charade go on? And we say, well, it looks like for a while. And when the Congressional Budget Office comes out and says the U.S. debt will be double in 28 years, raising the risk of a financial crisis. They are always wrong on both sides of this. They're always wrong on estimating how much income we'll have. They're always too low, or they're always too high. And they're always wrong on how much debt we're going to have. They're always way low. They're always wrong on when you know, Social Security Trust Fund will be broke. All this kind of stuff comes out, and they base their math on current stuff. But when I did my math on my calculator, and I think I got it right, when you take cost of borrowing that's gone up significantly, and you equate, and I know we have a lot of debt that's, you know, not that high in cost on the books now, but new debt, you know, it's expensive. And the U.S. will always try to find the cheapest place to borrow. Right now, they're not borrowing a lot of short-term stuff because short-term stuff's really high. But long-term stuff, historically, is still pretty low. The 10-year, 30-year, that's pretty low still historically. So that's where we're borrowing right now. Well, if you just did a $31 trillion present value and you put, let's say, a 3.5% or 4% coupon to it and did a future value and let's say, you know, 20 years, that'll tell you where the debt's going to be. And then on top of that, you do a separate calculation of $1 trillion a year of additional borrowing and a PV of that and a future value of that. I'm telling you right now that this financial crisis isn't 28 years away. I think it's much closer than that. And I don't know exactly what that means or what that looks like, but I do know this, that someone's going to have to pay the tab. Right? You can't go have a great dinner at Malibu or a great dinner at Uptown or a great dinner at all the other great restaurants we have around Bloomington and eat, and just walk out, right? I did that one time with my uncle when I was about 13. I didn't know what was going on, but it was a Waffle House, and it was like, I don't know. He just said, go start the car. Oh, that was a story I actually told at his funeral because I knew I couldn't tell it until he was passed away. But it's a funny story. But anyway, you can do it, but it's against the law. You can do tax avoidance, tax evasion. That's avoidance is okay. Evasion, not so much. But you do need to pay the bar tab. Well, where's that money going to come from? Well, I predict in the next 10 years that retirement accounts will have over $60 to $80 trillion sitting them tax deferred, which means taxes have never been paid. So we're hammering home this idea that, listen, taxes are on sale. And if you want to take advantage of that, do it now. Pay the tax on those IRAs. Pay it at 12. Pay it at 22. Pay it at 24. It doesn't matter. And get it out of the crosshairs because it is the easiest pickings of all. And guess what? Even better. The market's down 15, 20%, maybe more in some individual stocks. You can convert your positions over. You don't have to sell anything. Convert that low mutual fund value, that low stock value. Convert it over. And now, you pay the tax on that number. But then when we have a recovery, and we will, and usually it happens rapidly when it happens, then you'll get all that money back tax-free and potentially have returned all, paid back yourself all the tax you paid. And you don't have to wait this thing out over a long period of time. So I had a call this week from a vendor, a friend of mine, and he's a listener as well, about his, I think his father-in-law, grandfather, something, 80-some years old. He said, is there absolutely any reason he should consider a Roth conversion? He really wants to. And I'm like, absolutely. You know, so we went through the scenarios, and I said, you have to listen to the podcast on multi-generational wealth on a Roth conversion, because not only is it a Roth conversion for him, but then his wife, who's younger, can keep it tax-free. When she dies, it gets moved on to the kids tax-free. The kids have no required distributions. They can let it sit there tax-free for 10 more years and parlay a conversion now into multi-millions of dollars down the road. And then he texted me and said he's doing the Roth conversion. So I love it. So thank you, Brad, for that phone call and for the info that I can share on the radio. Let's take a quick break. Come back. Gold prices surprisingly declined despite metal's stature, that metal stature as a haven. We'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, I'm making it, guys. I'm making it. We're almost there. I can see the finish line. I can see the goal line from here. You know, so here's the deal about gold. Most of the time, you expect gold to be an inflation hedge. That's the way people have looked at it, or a safe haven. When things are crazy, you run to it. But take a look at 2008. In 2008, during the financial crisis, stocks, bonds, real estate, gold, it was all down, all down. The only thing that was up were treasuries. Well, guess what's happening now? Gold is down. And you have to look and say, well, why is that? You have to look to the dollar. Is the dollar strong or is it weak? Well, it's actually very strong, which makes no sense, but that just shows you that we are the prettiest girl at the ugly girl dance, And we have the strongest, we have a strong dollar against the yuan, against, I mean, against the pound. I mean, it's crazy. Against the Canadian currency, it's crazy. So when the dollar goes up, commodities go down in value across the board. Not just gold, but everything else, which tells me it's a commodity. It's not a currency. And that's always been a discussion that I will always win, that you cannot, you've got to convert your gold to a currency to trade it. And that's where I get in, you know, on the crypto stuff. You know, I've never been a fan of that. And I may be old school, and I am. I admit that. But I just don't get it where people think that gold is where you go to hedge inflation, because right now it's all about the dollar. If the dollar weakens, it goes up with other commodities. And then also, I'm going to be traveling abroad next year. I hope the dollar stays really strong. Think about it this way. From a military standpoint, when the dollar is strong, you take it abroad. When it's weak, you come home. It buys more overseas. When it's weak, it costs you more to be overseas. And that's the way you should approach gold. So it is kind of interesting, because a lot of folks thought, well, okay, I'll go into gold. But what people are finding is, why do I want to be over here when I can go over here, like we were talking earlier, and make a decent return on U.S. bonds? So right now, it's not a bond, or I'm sorry, gold bug. It's a bond bug that people have that are looking for a place to park money, get decent returns, and be assured that it's going to be there when they need it. All right, let's take a quick break, come back, and wrap this thing up. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Boy, here we are, right, at the end of the show, and I made it through, so hopefully next week will be much, much better. Looking forward to this weekend. Of course, I'll be in Florida, Disney World. It's me, my wife, and two friends who are big Disney vacation people, and doing an adult trip. Of course, I'll do bass fishing in the Seven Seas Lagoon down there in Florida after coming off a crazy trip last week to Dallas, to Kentucky, and then all over the place. This should be super relaxing. So I'll be calling Glass in the afternoon from sunny Florida, and I understand it's going to be scorching hot there, which I was hoping it would not be. It's Cheese and Wine Festival at Epcot. That'll be fun. And, yeah, just going to have a great time. And then next week, I'll be back in the studio with a great voice and without the Tom Allen impersonation. But with that said, Indiana is 3-0 in football. The Cardiac Kids, like they were in 1967. I'm not predicting a Rose Bowl this year, but we can go to Cincinnati and put a shocker on them. If that happens, then anything's possible. Have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks for putting up with me. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Goodbye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.